Let me say, it's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking for the hour today about friendships, loneliness, and health, from the difference it makes for us to be connected with other people to what we can do to make ourselves less lonely. Loneliness in particular is what we're going to talk about for the rest of the hour. It's something that affects many of us, and the isolation can have effects beyond just our mental health. Nell Comprenol studies loneliness and social connectedness in her work as a senior research scientist with The Bridge at NORC at the University of Chicago. NORC is short for the National Opinion Research Center. Nell, welcome to the 21st show.
Happy to be here.
And Sarah Schroeders is a therapist at Stillwaters Counseling in Springfield. She also works as a counselor through Illinois Department of Human Services. Sarah, welcome to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, you can join throughout the rest of the hour today at 800-222-9455. What does it mean to you to be lonely? And what do you do to stay connected with your friends and your community? And what do you think we could or should be doing sort of as a society about loneliness? 800-222-9455. All right, Nell Comprenol with NORC, I'm going to start with you. And let's set a baseline. What is loneliness? How do you define it?
I'm so happy you asked that. It is just taking a step back after this rich discussion so far. There is kind of a leading definition or way of thinking about it related to the cognitive discrepancy perspective, which really holds on to the fact that there is, while they're related, social isolation and loneliness are quite distinct, in that social isolation can be thought of as the objective social relationship surrounding an individual, whereas loneliness then is that perceived social isolation. So kind of this discrepancy between one's actual and achieved social relationships with what it is they're actually looking for or needing. And so kind of thinking about this discrepancy and putting it into this, I think Lizette got at this quite nicely. My colleague at NORC, Louise Hawkley, and her University of Chicago colleagues, Cassiopo, have this wonderful theory on the evolutionary theory of loneliness, which really posits that at our core and what kind of sets us apart from other mammals is really this social, we are social creatures that need safe and secure social environment to survive and thrive. And so thinking about that, loneliness, as kind of our listeners and this conversation has gotten to, is it's an evolved, normal, natural experience, kind of like hunger. And so we've evolved as these social beings where loneliness acts as a prompt or a trigger to have us take a step back and reevaluate our social environment. What is it about it that is not helping us to survive and thrive? And so thinking about, again, this kind of activation piece. And so, you know, when we talk about what we can do or who's at increased risk, we can think about ways then to change our social environment. And so individuals may be better or not as good at then kind of being able to control it. There's kind of this psychosocial component where if you are unable then to change your social environment, you may experience this sort of hypervigilance with loneliness where it kind of increases your maladaptive responses. And so you might then start to seek social relationships or interactions less often. It increases cortisol levels. And so kind of this chronic stressors then might lead into not just adverse health outcomes, but kind of coincide with some of these maladaptive responses where paradoxically you are seeking out social relationships less often, kind of leading to this loneliness feedback loop.
Yeah, kind of a spiral there. You know, I'm intrigued, right. Sarah. I'm intrigued, Sarah, by something that Nell mentioned about sort of the difference between, you know, actually being able to measure sort of social isolation and loneliness being the perception, right? And there's this band, people can look this up, called Chatham County Line. I saw them perform in Springfield years ago, and they had a song called Alone in New York, right? And it's this idea that you can be lonely in a crowd. So, Sarah, what are some of the ways that loneliness manifests in our lives?
Sure, absolutely. When it comes to loneliness, I look at especially during the adolescent ages, because that is the age group that I primarily work with, 14 through like 27. When I'm looking at loneliness, I look at some of the risk factors that they may exhibit due to that loneliness. So some of the risk factors that they are some of the risk factors that they have are an increased risk for smoking, drug use, misuse of alcohol, or developing process addictions. And so when individuals express loneliness, those are some of the things that we kind of look at to explore to see if those are any things that they experience. Additionally, kind of going on the note that Nell explained, when we're looking at social isolation, it does become kind of what I like to describe to people, a snake that kind of eats itself. You do develop that hypervigilance of your surroundings, and you start to view the outside world, so to speak, as a social threat, which then increases cortisol levels, which then makes you more hypervigilant and makes that feeling of the social world outside being more and more scary. And so that is when we get into the realm of maybe dissociative disorders, and sometimes even a more complex level of dissociative disorder, where individuals may experience depersonalization or derealization. So they might experience a feeling of being disconnected from themselves and others, not just emotionally, but physically. And they might have an altered sense of perception because of that.
All right, let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're talking today about friendships and loneliness and health and the difference it makes for us to be connected to other people and what we can do to make ourselves less lonely. For the last part of the program, we're sort of talking about that in a more practical way with Sarah Schroeders, who's a therapist at Stillwaters Counseling in Springfield, and Nell Compernell, who studies loneliness and social connectedness in her work as a senior research scientist with The Bridge at NORC at the University of Chicago, the National Opinion Research Center. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. This is the 21st show. Stay with us. It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we're talking about what has been described as an epidemic of loneliness in America, from how we feel loneliness to what's driving those feelings and what we can do about them. More listener text messages. Tony in Champaign said, "I've experienced loneliness as a sort of stress, though not in a very long while. I don't think social media would have been any help. I've always found communing with nature much more effective." And Randy in rural Peoria County told us in part, the reason everyone is at risk of isolation is this. In the past, if one had a variation from the vast norm, it may be a bit odd. Now it's spoken that the difference may be a reason to eliminate that one from the earth. People are just not lonely. They are in fear. That can't be good for our lives as Americans. Our guests for this part of the show are Sarah Schroeder, a therapist in Springfield, and research scientist Nell Compernell. And you can join the conversation today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Sarah, in your experience, how do people do at sort of recognizing when they are lonely?
In the cases that I've worked, or I guess in the settings that I've worked with individuals, I haven't really had individuals come expressing loneliness. Typically, they come expressing the mental health complexities they have due to that loneliness. Just kind of like an interesting fact is that most individuals before the age of 24, 75% of mental health issues will emerge by that age. And so often I will have adolescents that come in expressing their anxieties or expressing some of their complexities in regards to feelings of dissociative disorders, maybe feeling not quite like themselves, maybe feeling like they are unattached from their bodies. Some will express a feeling of kind of like they're floating, or some may express a feeling that they are like an NPC in a video game, just kind of like going through life, but not actually like feeling as though they're living it or experiencing it. So then we have to take a step back and kind of understand where did that feeling come from. Sometimes it can be trauma, sometimes it can be other instances, but in the realm of what I've been seeing lately, a lot of it comes from feelings of isolation, feelings of loneliness, which impact them vastly. In addition to any dissociative features, some may experience, like I mentioned earlier, anxieties or even people-pleasing features. So typically they'll come with those, I don't want to say complaints, but for lack of better words, complaints of those symptoms. And then we have to kind of take a look back and dissect where did these come from. And often loneliness and isolation are a source, or at least one of those sources for individuals.
Now, there was an APA, American Psychological Association study that found or estimated half of U.S. adults say they lack companionship or are isolated from others, at least some of the time. What are some of the factors behind that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I do think prevalence kind of varies across, but it is true in that a growing number of American adults are reporting feelings or experiences with loneliness. And part of that was due to kind of what we had discussed earlier, and that is just natural changes to one's kind of social relationships, whether it is, trends over time or with age. We are less likely to be married. We are less likely to stay married. We are more likely than at any other time to live alone. And we discussed this earlier, but kind of as we age, our mobility declines. And so, again, that changes our ability to, as that wonderful listener noted, go outside, go into nature, or as Lizette talked earlier, kind of go and walk around the neighborhood and experience spontaneous social interactions. And so there's kind of larger trends is we ch as we kind of over time in how we structure our social lives. I think there is also an element that we have not recovered fully from the pandemic in that we got very used to staying home. And, whether it was interacting virtually, we've talked a lot about social media. And while social media and digital interactions have really serve a purpose and provide value, they do not replace that in-person feelings of social connection.
You know, a couple of messages from listeners that I think are on point with that. One is from Jesse in Mattoon, who says, "Loneliness is what makes us Americans lately. Too politically charged to have any real conversation with anyone. My heart breaks for our kids." And then another person who asked to remain anonymous said, "I'm an introvert, love to spend time alone. It's the easy default for me. Yet I also feel quite forlorn at times. I miss close relatives that I haven't seen since COVID. I take part in community groups, but never quite make it to the friend level. Is social isolation the root of our evils today in America? When I think of all the folks that are marginalized and alone, I feel like I'm part of the problem." Thank you for sharing that message. Nell, where do you land in terms of the cause and effect relationship here?
That's tricky. I do think, again, there's larger social patterns that are changing. I do think there's some nice research that has kind of identified key dimensions of loneliness that could help us understand some of these broader social trends and then kind of how that relates to our feelings of social isolation. And they all kind of subscribe to providing or feeling that you provide social value across these dimensions. So one is in the intimate realm. So kind of, do you provide social value as an individual? This is oftentimes captured in marital relationships or with a romantic partner. The second is similar, but with dyadic relationships. Your listener who called in had a nice note on kind of getting at that deeper friendship level. So the relational dimension is really related to number of family and friendships of quality. And this third one is really interesting. And I think the listeners and everyone is getting to this quite nicely. And this is a collective dimension. So really whether an individual feels a collective identity or belonging to a group. And I do think that kind of our polarizing political climate of today and kind of our individualistic attitudes in general have kind of then exacerbated since the pandemic of feeling like, you know, we may not belong to this broader collective society. We may distrust some of these interactions more often than we used to. And it is kind of harder to find something that you feel a part of.
Sarah, I want to share another message from a listener. This is from Christopher in Brimfield. When we asked about loneliness, he mentioned it's an epidemic among men, especially. There have been books written about this lately. What do you think of that? Do you see this in your work?
I do see this in my work. I don't get as many male clients coming in as I do female clients. But in the male clients that I do get, I more often than not have them express feelings of loneliness. Some of them do express some of their behaviors shift or have expressed shifts in their behavior. So, for example, maybe switching to a more sedentary lifestyle, having jobs or hobbies that are sedentary, getting out, doing less, touching less surfaces, less objects, just kind of in general, being isolated. And that does play an impact on our mental health. That does play an impact on our wellness. And just as mentioned before, we are multisensory people. So when we do isolate and we're not getting those sensory experiences, we are underutilizing parts of our brain, and that overall can impact our mental and emotional wellness in many ways.
I want to share a counterpoint to that idea of the male loneliness epidemic. This is from Christina in Springfield, who says, in response to our prompt in the text messaging group, I feel like this is just an extension of the conversation around the manufactured male loneliness epidemic, in quotes. People aren't lonely. They're traumatized, overworked, underpaid. They're socialized badly, anti-socialized, really, due to hyper-individualism and probably partially propelled by technology. And in a similar vein, John in Rockford writes, is it an epidemic only of loneliness, or is it also an epidemic of alienation? Eric Fromm, in his 1955 book, The Sane Society, wrote at length about the latter, which he described as an almost unavoidable disease of the citizenry of any modern industrial capitalist society. Nell, what do you think of those critiques of the idea of the male loneliness epidemic?
Those were very, very thoughtful contributions to this discussion. I would like to thank them for that. And for one, I would say that when it comes to an epidemic, I would say that the data do support more of an epidemic of social isolation. Loneliness has kind of been common for quite some time. Again, following that U-shaped curve across the life course, we have somewhat recovered to pre-pandemic times, but it is really a social isolation story with, of course, loneliness consequences. When it comes to gender differences, it is interesting. I should just note that we find some interesting measurement discrepancies, and that is that men tend to report loneliness when loneliness as a word is not included in the survey item. And so they actually will come up in the data as have been experiencing more loneliness when you ask about it using certain words, whether it is lacking companionship or feeling left out. Whereas women report higher rates when you do include loneliness in the stem, which is interesting. I think over time, there is a very, very complicated story that a lot of pieces are part of this. One is that men's social lives do tend to revolve more around their wives in later life than do women's. And that is part of it if a marriage dissolves. I completely agree with the listener that there are the workplace has changed. And so retirement has certain implications for men and their partners and women as they kind of change their employment status. But I do think that the story remains quite true and that across these intimate, relational, and collective dimensions of loneliness, men and women both, and across the age categories, we are feeling it in new ways and because of new reasons.
We're coming to the end of our time together. I do want to take a moment, though, to ask, sort of from a practical standpoint, Sarah, and maybe just about a minute and a half, given everything we've talked about, how do you help people deal with loneliness and isolation?
Sure, absolutely. Usually the first step is for me to help them identify what their I guess reasoning for the isolation is. Is it a psychological reason? Is it social? Is it a neurocognitive driven factor? Is it an issue between with the relationship with their community? Identifying why they may be isolated or feel isolated or self-isolating. And then we incorporate different skills to try to help alleviate that and make steps to either reintegrate into the community or and or also address some of the other mental health needs that accompany what they may be experiencing, for example, anxiety or depersonalization. I like to use a multisensory approach in my practice, including somatic work. I found that to be very beneficial for individuals that are experiencing loneliness to a level where they are having mental health issues stemming from it. And so I have found that somatic and polyvagal theory have been very beneficial, as well as cognitive behavior therapy strategies for identifying the why and working on ways to make changes to reintegrate back into the community and no longer feel lonely or no longer self-isolate.
Sarah Schroeder is a therapist with Stillwaters Counseling. Nell Comprenol is a senior research scientist with the Bridge at NORC at the University of Chicago. Thank you so much for being with us and sharing your knowledge with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for our program today. Coming up tomorrow, we're talking about the toy industry. It's not what it used to be, but it survived in no small part because of grown-ups spending on toys for themselves. We'll talk about that with someone who's been reviving an old toy maker based in Rockford. Plus, Illinois musicians Karim Nagy and Rami Gabriel fuse Middle Eastern music with Chicago's deep well of jazz and blues. Their band is called the Arab Blues. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.